Hi, I'm Robin Leach with those champagne wishes and caviar dreams for the Magic Word Podcast.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, this week we continue with our Las Vegas Chronicles as we visit one of the homes from the lifestyles of the rich and famous Mr. Robin Leach. It was an honor to get an opportunity to visit with this celebrity, someone who is not necessarily known as a magician, but I always thought that he had a warm relationship with magicians and for magic, and I was surprised to find out how warm that love really is from the standpoint that he has very strong opinions on magic and magicians and the way they perform in Las Vegas and perform in general. He's not necessarily a fan of hypnotists, but he does love magic and thinks that it should be on a higher plane than where it is than right now. Well, this week I was going to be attending the Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic. I have been going for well over 30 years and have only missed twice in the last 30-plus years, but some personal circumstances have cropped up such that I have been unable to attend here this week, so that's why we're not going to be giving you the daily updates from Batavia, New York, and Obie's 4F Convention, as it's called now. And I am sorry that I'm not able to be there and to give you those updates. I know it would have been and is probably a great time as we're speaking now, that it's probably, as it's going on, that having a great time. But not to fear. My plan is, again, to return next year. Things will correct themselves here within my life, and also that my plans are still to have some other episodes in the future that will, of course, include some daily updates, for an example, from the combined IBM and SAM convention coming up in July. Prior to that time, however, that I was planning on going over to France, but again, that has been kind of put on hold. This was going to be during the month of June, but since that freed up my month, I was speaking with Jack Goldfinger, and I'll be returning to the Magic Castle. So I'll be performing in the close-up gallery from June 19th through the 25th, and during that time, of course, as I've done in the past, get an opportunity to speak with a lot of friends who are going to be working there with me and throughout the week, as well as others who are coming and going, who are members and people living in and around the LA area, people dropping by just to have some other long conversations with them. And that's always a great time, and also one of the more popular series that I have broadcast on this podcast from time to time. So look for that towards the end of June. Prior to that, and as soon as these chronicles have ended, we have a lot of really great podcasts as well that I've already more or less got in the can and just waiting to release here soon. So we just have a few more to go before we are finished, move on from Las Vegas. And I know that you're going to continue to enjoy the ones that we have planned for you for the next couple of weeks. And the one right now, again, is with Robin Leach. And so it was because of the Friends of the Magic Word who financial support has helped to defray the costs for this, and also they're the ones who helped defray and pay for the shipping costs for the prizes. What prizes, you ask? Well, I'm glad you did. You see, thanks to the generosity of H&R Magic Books, they have a series of books called Nick Trost Subtle Card Creations, and we have given away several copies of those over the last few weeks, and this week we are going to be also giving away two more copies, and this time it's going to be of Nick Trost's Subtle Card Creations, Volume 5. And then the next week, we will then be giving away the brand new book, which is being released at the 4F Obie's 4F Convention then right now, which will be Volume 6. So you'll want to be sure to get the details on the backside of this podcast, and I'll tell you not only how to enter the contest, but also the winners of this past week's contest for a copy, or the two copies we had to give away from Volume 4. And I, again, want to thank the Friends of the Magic Word, whose financial support has helped to pay for the shipping of those books, as well as to help defray the costs for producing these Las Vegas Chronicles, allowing me to get out there and back and transportation, lodging, and everything else. So anyhow, I think now is the time for me to introduce my guest for this week. And again, stay tuned on the back end of this to learn more about the contest. But in the meantime, please enjoy my guest for this week, Mr. Robin Leach, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are here today in the fabulous Sin City, Las Vegas, and I've got with me someone who is an author, and also he has his own vlog, video log, and talks about what's happening around Las Vegas, and you've heard him before, perhaps on Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Please welcome my guest today, Mr. Robin Leach. Hi there, Robin.
Abracadabra.
Here we are. So you were just having some tea. You say you don't like American tea.
Too thin.
Too thin. Okay.
You know, in England, where I come from, they still use tea leaves, and they put them in the pot over the fire, and they just keep adding more and more tea leaves. So by the end of the night, it's like a thick, fat stew. No, soups are too thin.
Okay, I got you.
So the thicker the tea is, the better the cup of tea is.
Now, Terry Seabrook had told me, or it was Pat Page, I guess, had taught my wife the way to brew a proper cup of tea, and then you also have to heat the cup with hot water and then dump it out, so that way that the cup is hot, too.
It's an art to drinking badly, because coffee gives you caffeine, but tea gives you tannin.
And so does wine, so I think I'd almost...
Yeah, but wine is medicine to me.
So it is. Okay. Now, as far as the tea goes, and you say you drink it like a proper Englishman, so with two tea bags and...
Two tea bags and just a dash of milk.
And what about sugar?
I don't use sugar.
No? Sounds good. Right way to make it. Well, listen, the reason I wanted to come over and talk with you about this today is that people might be saying, well, wait, this is a podcast for magicians. Why are we talking to Robin Leach about magic? Well, you know, you have you like magic and magicians and have written up some articles about other magicians. And I'm sure that in the Lifestyles of Rich and Famous, you may have been to Chris Angel's house or David Copperfield.
Well, first of all... you know, magic to me is the greatest form of show business entertainment.
I love you, man.
Because you have to suspend belief.
Right.
And believe it or not, I magic and I go back together to when I was 18 years of age. I'm not going to tell you a story about my grandmother giving me a magic kit when I was 5, which every magician seems to tell that story from Chris Angel to Matt Franco. Mm-hmm. But in England, when I lived there at age 18, before I came here when I was 21, we had a magician called Robert Harbin.
Sure, he invented the zigzag.
Okay, you know more than I do, but to me he was a genius of a showman.
He was.
And because I was so fascinated with what he did and what he was able to achieve, I interviewed him, and he liked the story that I wrote and invited me to the Magic Circle. Mm-hmm. So I met everybody who was a magician in England at the Magic Circle. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize at the time how hallowed a place it was. Mm-hmm. I was made an honorary member.
Oh, really?
And ever since...
And you didn't have to perform?
No.
Well, even the Prince Charles had to perform to be a member.
I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to cut my tie in half. I think it was cut in half, though, by somebody and not put back together again.
Oh, okay.
But...
That's not a trick. That's just a prank.
And ever since then, I've been fascinated by the art of magic. I have some incredible magic books here in the house. And I find magicians the... I don't want this to come off the wrong way, so I'm going to use the wrong word. But they're the least thought of people in show business. Lowest rung of show business, when they should be at the top of show business. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, this comes about because it's a profession where magicians sell out, unfortunately they have to do crappy children's parties.
Mm-hmm. Got to pay the light bills.
The light bill has to be paid. And they work in oddball places, like bad cruise ships. Mm-hmm. And they wear rather tattered and worn tuxedos that have gravy stains on them because they can't afford to go to the...
So you have been around magicians a lot.
Yes. So, and I feel sad for them because
look, they deserve a higher
level. As David Copperfield confirmed to me once, there are only seven tricks. There are 100 versions of each of the seven, mm-hmm. but there's only seven basic tricks.
Basic elements of magic, that's right.
Basic elements mm-hmm. of magic.
That's true.
I never want to know how a trick is done. Mm-hmm. I just want to suspend the wonder of it. Mm-hmm. Some of them I can figure out for myself, having been around the profession for so long. But I find that when magicians aren't talking about other magicians badly, mm-hmm. they're really, really nice, interesting people. I think, you know, I make a couple of observations about magicians. Socially, they're not very adept, which is why they took up magic in the first place.
True.
I think that also because magicians probably never got the most gorgeous girl at the high school prom, that they took up magic as a way of reaching the most gorgeous girl at the prom.
Right.
And doing a trick for her
Something cool. Then
inviting her out rather than just inviting her out based on their personality.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because perhaps they didn't have a personality, which is what the magic does, is it empowers people, I believe, those who might be introverted. And particularly, it's great for children because it teaches them some skills who may not really know much about public speaking or might be, as I said, a little introverted. And so it gives you that sense of, not if not power, at least some social skills. So some people feel they have to hide behind that. They don't realize by the time that they've used it to where they need it, that they can put that aside and then engage without doing a trick.
You know, But they never put it aside. It's interesting because I always have an expression, you know, never trust somebody who doesn't drink. Mm-hmm. The same expression could sort of just be twisted a little bit to apply to magicians.
We should be having martinis then.
Because they're always tricking you. Mm. What you see is never what you get. I don't think you ever really know and understand a magician.
Yeah.
Because there's an illusion that's going on as you get to know them. One of my best friends in magic is a wonderful, wonderful guy called Bill Malone.
I know Bill.
And Bill, he's a teacher of magic. Mm-hmm. He's a student of magic. He invented a trick called Sam...
The bellhop.
Mm-hmm. I am just blown away every time I see that trick. Mm-hmm. Now, he tried to teach it to a magician here...
In Las Vegas. Yeah.
Who couldn't master it.
It's a difficult trick. All the cuts and shuffles and false... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
you can memorize the script, but there's a lot going on that you got to multitask. It's not an easy thing, that's for
sure.
Yes,
and I don't know which is the smarter thing, your hands, your fingers, or your brain, or your vocal box.
Yeah, yeah.
It is an extraordinary trick. It is mesmerizing. And and Bill uses it with humor mm-hmm. And storytelling. And it's done so brilliantly that you lose sight of Bill Malone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he gets lost in there and you're watching the effect.
No, he doesn't get lost in himself. You get lost. You stop watching him and you're watching Sam and the bellhop.
Okay, yeah.
So I tell you an interesting story about Bill. I invited Bill down to my home in the Caribbean for my 50th birthday. And... we set up part of the house so he had a tiny little performance area. And the island where I lived was very small. And all of the help on the island was Antiguan. Mm-hmm. And I invited them to come celebrate my birthday with me and my own friends. And Bill and his wife stayed at the house for the event. And then I announced that Bill was going to do some magic. Mm-hmm. And he did magic to the point that all of the Antiguans ran out of the house.
They believed it was magic.
A witch doctor.
Witch doctor, okay.
So that has to be the greatest testament to... To me, it was the funniest scene ever. But Bill really spooked those people out.
Because he made it seem real.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Brilliantly.
Yeah. He wasn't doing card tricks, he was doing magic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, he did card tricks as well, but he was, I mean, he's just a very talented guy.
Well, his personality and everything disarms you, certainly, and the way he presents it and his humor, and he's quick.
I think it was when he pulled three decks of cards out of his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when they started running. They turned and ran. Probably the only time he's lost a member of the audience.
Now, did you visit his place? Remember he had that place down, was it West Palm Beach?
That was in Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale.
Where he was, yes, I was at his club. Mm-hmm. And before he opened that club, he was also at the yacht club mm-hmm. giving shows for people that came in from their charter trips mm-hmm. and before they went off on charter trips.
Yeah, the yacht club kind of a
yeah.
thing? Okay.
So he was a very gregarious guy, always busy. Mm-hmm. And people just... You know, they loved him. He was a teddy bear of a guy.
Exactly.
And he performed card tricks that nobody else has ever seen. Living here in Las Vegas, of course, this is the magic capital of the world. I mean, we have more magicians per square feet than I think we have pastors and church attendees.
Yeah.
We have some extraordinary magicians who live here, and I'm not just talking the big names that you see on the strip, like Chris Angel and David Copperfield and Matt Franco. Lance Burton, you know, had a show here for 15 years at the Monte Carlo, and he's about to be inducted into the Hall of Fame here in Vegas March the 7th. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go and give him a little congratulatory speech.
Nice.
But we have some of the FBI's experts in magic, experts in card trickery mm-hmm. that the casinos have on their payroll to thwart card counters and mm-hmm.
So they can kind of be watching the sky in the eye to kind of see what people are doing.
Yeah, but the FBI's magic team, they know better than the camera in the sky.
Really?
When they're doing...
You know, along that line, I heard a story that Daryl had talked about. I don't know if you know Daryl or know the name, that he had a book called The Puerto Rican Gambler, and he's... excellent magician, and was part of one time called the Magic Hedonist. It was him and Michael Lamar and Paul Harris. Anyhow, that he was gambling one time, and somebody came, tapped him on the shoulder, said, you know, I want you to come with us. And he went upstairs, and they said, we've been watching you down there, you know, through the camera. And said, are you Daryl? He said, yes. And he said, are you the one who wrote The Puerto Rican Gambler? And he said, yeah. And he started to sweat a little bit. And then this guy said, well, I'm a magician fan. He said, I noticed your ring had a question mark on it, and that was the picture that was on the cover of the book that I have. And when I'm watching, you know, for gamblers down there, I just spotted your ring, and I wondered if that was you. I just wanted to come and shake your hand and say, I wanted to meet you. And he was sweating it out like, oh, okay.
Daryl breathed a sigh of relief.
Exactly.
Well, upstairs in the rooms where there are cameras, they've used magicians to teach security here mm-hmm. What to look for when people are card counting or trying to shuffle cards inside out. Mm-hmm. I've met some of those agents, and they, I will tell you this, I've been blown away by what they can do.
Of course, they wouldn't be...
Because they're better magicians than the magicians who are coming in trying to cheat the casino.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating profession.
Well, speak Bill Malone. You know, Bill Malone was at Magic Live, I think, last year, and talking with Steve Forte and Ron Conley, you know, and Darwin Ortiz is another guy who is a consultant into there. So, I mean, I know those guys are really good card players,
manipulators,
exactly. So then they what to look for then. And over a period of time, you know, you get to be pretty sharp as to what you think people are going to be doing.
What they do with a deck of cards or two decks of cards is just amazing. I mean, it's as amazing as the flying Willenders on a tightrope 100 yeah. feet in the air above the Grand Canyon. It's that amazing.
You were talking about Bill doing saying the bellhop, and I was thinking about Ricky Jay also. Have you seen Ricky work?
Yes, and I've seen Ricky Jay cut a pineapple in pieces. Ricky Jay and his 52 friends.
Yes, 52 assistants.
I had to pay scalper prices for the tickets to that show.
But you got
show.
In to see the show.
I got in to see the show in New York a long time ago. And I subscribed for a long time to his amazing monthly
newsletter,
which came in a bag with either a trick inside it or some kind of magic inside it, plus his newsletter, printed on beautiful parchment paper, which I keep upstairs with my collection of Stan Allen's now-defunct magic magazine.
Right.
Well,
I saw Ricky on the stem when he was performing in that next iteration.
That was the follow-up show.
Yes, it was. And there was one thing that he did where he did a night's tour. He had somebody up here and he gave them two stacks of cards. One of them had some mathematical calculations. The other one were names of songs and they could shuffle them up or whatever. And then he had a night's, if you're familiar with a night's tour, it's a chessboard basically where the knight can move across the table or the board and never repeat the same square. So you can go through all the squares once, and so they'd flip off the light. So he would, you know, they would start wherever, and then he would be saying, you know, 62, 35, 27, you know, and so this way, then the guy would move the knight, and you could see where it was. And then at any point, the guy would say switch or stop, you know, and then this guy would read the name of a song, and then he would sing the chorus to that song, and then he would go back to this other thing and say, okay, and then the guy said, what's the square root of 6,432 or something, you know, and then he'll say something point, da 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 da, and then go back to it. It's just like to have your brain to switch just that quickly.
Ricky Jay is a genius.
He is a genius. That's all.
Total genius. we have, you know, people come to Las Vegas to look at magic, to watch magic. Yeah. Chris Angel changed the face of magic in this city, being the rebel that he is. Mm-hmm. Loud and rock and roll and what you would call modern magic.
And he packs the house. I can't believe the kinds of rabid fans he's had. I mean, I've been backstage and I've seen, you know, some of the people that are coming in. They've got their bodies tattooed with his picture and all kinds of stuff. It's like, what?
Still to this day, I think he's 8 years into his run of the show with Cirque. And he changed it over after 5 years, 6 years into Mind Freak Live, which is
a good thing. The first one iteration was not so great. From what I had read, reviews.
Well, don't believe everything you read.
Okay, then.
I mean, there were some weaknesses. Okay. And even Chris acknowledges that there were weaknesses. Trying to marry his view of magic to
someone else's view.
Cirque's view of how you present spectaculars.
Yes.
That didn't quite gel. It was a little bit of oil and water.
That's what I understand. But once they gave him more freedom, then it really tightened up a much better.
He took over the business of writing a new show and producing a new show and directing a new show. Mm-hmm. And I think now that in 90 minutes, he's got something like 42 different tricks and illusions in the show. So it comes at you very rapidly.
Yeah.
I mean, he puts his heart and soul and complete guts into the show twice a night. And is the only magician that is completely selling out in Vegas every performance.
And it's a huge theater, what, 2,000-seat theater or something?
Yeah, it's a big theater. Uh-huh. Big theater.
Well, magicians have a lot to compete with, I think, you know, out here, because it's not magician on magician as far as, you know, I'm competing against you, but you're competing against a Cirque show or a hypnotist or
Don't let's talk Celine about Dion. Because I don't think, exactly, you can talk about Celine and you can talk about, you know, Cher or Diana Ross.
There are other kinds of competition.
Hypnotists, to me, is that's not really very clever.
Okay.
It's not very, very smart.
All right.
Now, we'll get hundreds of letters saying, how dare you, you know.
For all the hypnotists, yeah.
Because they consider it to be an art, and I consider it to be like WWE wrestling.
It's all show.
It's all show.
Yeah.
And thank heavens for dumb audience members who really think they're 6 feet under.
Yeah, and then line up afterwards to to be hypnotized. Yeah, can you help me with my smoking or whatever my addiction is or something? That's pretty true. But I'm just saying that, yeah, the magicians are competing. There are a lot of them out here, and everybody wants to have a show. And that's kind of, if I can just kind of backpedal a little bit, because one of the main reasons I want to talk with you, because of your background, having come out here and been for so long, you saw from the beginning, because I always think of Siegfried and Roy being the ones who kind of broke that open, you know, and then others started following. I just want to kind of go through the evolution of that.
There were other magicians here before Siegfried and Roy, but of the old school.
Mm-hmm. Channing Pollock, I think, was here.
Just to mention one.
Yeah.
But Siegfried and Roy did something that defined the word spectacular with the animals as part of the magic. And it was the first time, I think, that you had a 95-minute show with a storyline.
Yeah.
That wound up with, you know, evil Lynette.
Yeah, Lynette Chappelle, yeah, yeah.
Who's the nicest lady in the world.
Very sweet.
Who's still there looking after Roy to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
I had never seen a show like Siegfried and Roy in my life. I don't think anybody else ever
did. I mean, when they hit Vegas, that had to be just spectacular. And they just had a small part to begin with on the Hallelujah Hollywood, like a 2-minute.
Right, they were not headliners when they came.
Part of
a
variety.
They came here from Puerto Rico.
Oh, really?
They were on a ship.
Ship, yeah, I knew they were traveling.
On a ship, and they got off the ship with an offer of a job in Puerto Rico that Siegfried really believed would get them to Las Vegas.
Oh, this was his goal. He wanted to come here. Okay.
They knew about Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And
again, that would have been what, 76, 5, somewhere in there?
Somewhere in that region.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were at the El Magambo Hotel, El Something Hotel, and they said we can go from Puerto Rico to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And you're right, they came here, they landed here in the desert without a big gig,
mm-hmm.
nothing on the order that they had right up until the end.
And they had their a couple of lions or tigers with them, I guess, just some wild animals
I don't know that they had animals when they came here. If they did, they were tiny.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think you could put a 300-pound lion on a plane from Puerto Rico to Las Vegas. So I think they were tiger cats at the time.
Yeah, okay.
But it was when, you know, they partnered up with Ken Feld, and it became this absolutely extraordinary thing.
He's a great promoter.
Yeah. He's today's P.T. Barnum.
Mm-hmm. Good analogy.
So it was a family show.
Mm-hmm.
It had.
Well, they had evening show where they had topless dancers, but the afternoon they recovered, as I recall.
I don't even remember them being part of a topless show.
Okay, I thought they were at the Stardust.
And if anybody would remember, I would remember. But they changed the face of magic
mm-hmm.
for the city, so that from then on, anybody who came along. It wasn't that they had to be in competition to what they were doing, but they had to reach for the standard that Siegfried and Roy had set.
Because I heard it that magic wouldn't play in Vegas, quote unquote, you know, and they didn't have magicians as far as like a big review where that they were the magic would be the stars. And so whenever they came in again, they were just so spectacular you couldn't avoid them, I guess. You had to recognize these guys.
Because in the main part, magicians had been these characters, you know.
In top hat and tails and cape or whatever.
The only man who's carried off top hat and tails is Norm.
And Norm Nielsen. Ah, good point. Yeah.
Who is a genius.
Still is.
And still is.
Yeah.
Quite amazing. There's also a guy out of Sweden or Denmark who was a pediatrician, a children's doctor,
mm-hmm.
who did magic on the side to keep his fingers nimble for when he was operating on little newborn babies.
That's an interesting story.
Yeah.
You don't remember who that was?
Oh, it'll probably
come. Did he come to Vegas then or something? Or
he's been to Vegas. Stan Allen will know who he is.
It wasn't Hank Vermeiden?
No.
Mm. Okay.
No, I can't remember offhand.
Go ahead.
I mean, just pure brilliance, absolute brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to give credit when credit is due. So after Siegfried and Roy, the next big act that came in was Lance Burton with a...
After he'd won FISM and came to Hacienda, and yeah.
Well, they jumped him out of the Hacienda into his own show at Monte Carlo, where he was for 15 mm-hmm. years.
Was he at the Tropicana for a while or not? No?
Maybe.
Or
maybe
Aladdin or somewhere?
Hacienda. Yes, he was in Follies, I think, at...
Okay.
You know, he was just an act.
Mm-hmm. But after Johnny Carson, that probably put him on the map. You know, back in those days when they just had the three networks, you know,
Johnny was a big Magic fan.
I know. I've heard a lot of good stories about him, and magicians have shared with me stories about him. You know, Paul Gertner, others. What a guy he must have been. Did you know Johnny? Had you met him?
Met him, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't say that I knew him, but I met mm-hmm. him. But Lance was next, and then casino hotels here had realized that magicians weren't all just off a cruise ship in a
cheesy,
grimy tuxedo. Yeah. And then magic changed again with Amazing Jonathan and Chris Angel, which was really in-your-face magic.
Mm-hmm.
But
Chris didn't have the show until after he had built himself a brand through the Mind Freak TV show. Because when he opened, I think that people wanted to see him because, you know, you want to see someone who's been on television. So he's developed that.
Certainly his show came after the success of the
the
TV show. And he got his TV show out of appearing on the sidewalks of Times Square in New York.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it was kind of a circle-like kind of a thing. I remember seeing some of the early videos, and they had that kind of... He was doing sub-trunk, you know, back then, and the costumes that his assistants were wearing looked very surreal. You know, Rene Magritte and Salvador Dali kind of a thing, you know, that fit perfectly for the Cirque, you know, kind of a thing. So I just said it was his style. And then hung in the window, I think, with some hooks, you know, someplace. He had a very gothic kind of following and style.
Definitely gothic. And then, you know, AJ took it one step further with Real Blood.
Yeah, yeah. And what I think is funny about AJ, that Amazing Jonathan has, when you look at the show, he really doesn't do magic, but it's just, I mean, like when he has a build, he just puts tape around it eventually, you know. I mean, there's the gags, it's funny, it's just hilarious, you know. I mean, it's not like Matt King who does comedy, and then it's like, wow, where did those ropes go? How'd they get, you know, restored or whatever? So he kind of catches you, whereas Jonathan just really is hilarious, you know, different style.
My favorite magician of all time was a guy in England called Tommy Cooper.
Tommy Cooper. Yeah,
and the reason I loved Tommy Cooper was because every trick he did, he screwed up. And you would feel so sorry for him.
Uh-huh.
But then he would explain to you why he'd screwed up and would do the trick, and then he wouldn't believe that he'd done it.
It
was a brilliant act.
And then it worked.
It was like the guy who was Foster Brooks, who was, you remind me of him.
You're the second person to tell me that.
Today. You know, you really thought that Foster Brooks was a screaming alcoholic.
Yeah.
You watched Tommy Cooper.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Yes. And you really thought that he screwed up every trick.
Mm.
But it was just the way he got into be able to show you that he really could do the trick, which left you twice as amazed.
Right. Yeah.
And so bringing sensible comedy to magic, when it works, it's really great.
Mm-hmm.
When it doesn't work, it comes across as very cheesy and lowers the standing of the magician yet again.
Yeah. So does comedy really flip your switch as opposed to, let's say, like mentalism? I'm thinking like David Berglas, and there was also another guy in England who would do newspaper predictions and things. Apparently he was very popular in the UK. I can't remember his name either.
No, I don't remember.
And there was Maurice Fogel over there, you know, as well. Doesn't ring a bell. Okay, so anyhow, mentalism is not necessarily your cup of tea as much as what comedy, magic.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I just think that when you add comedy to a magic act, you've got to be very careful not to make it cheesy.
Mm.
And if you're
and you stock lines,
yeah. You know, in the most part, I don't think magicians really believe in themselves.
Hmm.
I think that's a social failing as part of the reason they got into magic
to begin with. Yeah.
They're hesitant. They're not demonstrably strong in their presentations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, currently we on the strip, you know, I mean, I love Matt King to death, but I think some of his comedy is not right.
Really? It fits, you know, his personality as a Louisville kind of a...
But that's not who he really is. I mean, I know he came here from Kentucky with Lance. They were both on the farm.
Right.
But Matt King is so talented, he doesn't need cheesy comedy to be the star that he really is.
What other direction do you think he could go?
Well, I produce television shows. I don't produce magic shows.
Okay. As a producer, you do tell people kind of where to go and what.
Yes, when you're doing things that you know of what you speak. I don't know of magic.
Okay, then.
I just have a respect for it.
Fair enough.
I think Matt King is a star of magic, mm-hmm. and I don't think he needs to have that star diminished with weak comedy.
Okay.
Now, I know that his act is an afternoon act, and he's carved out a very, very wonderful spot on the strip and with his career.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be nice to see... I've seen Mac work when it's not an afternoon matinee, mm-hmm. and the plaid suit has gone.
Mm-hmm. More of a corporate type of a thing, you're
saying?
He's
good.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. Great.
Hmm.
But he has that whole afternoon market to himself.
Yeah, you know, the only other afternoon show, Murray has got a show.
Well, there's a new French guy. Murray is another one I've told him about his comedy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new French magician here called Mortimer.
Oh, yes.
Who used to be a performer in Cirque du Soleil in the Michael Jackson show at Mandalay Bay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
quite unique.
Very unique. And he's brought a Cirque sort of influence to the magic that he does. His only problem is the language. You know, Americans... You know, you can't have a beard on television in America because the audience feels it's ominous.
Yeah, it's disguising something.
It's disguising something.
It's like a mask.
Like the clean cut. Mm-hmm. You can't have a southern voice. You can't have a western voice. You can't have a valley voice, which is why we have so many Canadian newscasters on American television.
There's something about the Midwestern accent. Those are the news reporters, the anchors, the weathermen and everything, too, that I'm from Illinois originally. Even though I've been living in Texas for 20 years, I'm sure I perhaps have a little bit of a twang. But I think really that most of my accent is hard to detect. But you're right. I know what you're saying, and that people don't want to hear that, or they immediately associate you with being in that part of the country, as you know.
So Canadians, mm-hmm. you know, like Peter Jennings, who I always think was a great newsman,
mm-hmm.
His voice is anonymous.
Good point. Is he from Canada?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
I'm pretty sure.
Whatever you say. It sounds good to me.
We've had many Canadian national network news anchors.
If only there was something in the internet that you could find out, you know, like that kind of a thing, you know.
Where was Peter Jennings born? We've digressed, but it's a long way around from what makes a magician a hit magician in a city where we have too many magicians.
Mm-hmm. And the answer
is being unique and being different is you know. How you get to the top. I find it interesting that David Blaine has never chosen to do a show here in Las Vegas.
I don't know that I would want to go and see a full evening of his show because he's not, from what I've seen on television, he's not engaging enough. It's, you know, like,
there we go back to personality.
Exactly. It's kind of like, here, look, cool.
What is magic?
Hey. Yeah.
Well, except one night I will tell you.
His magic is impeccable. It's great.
His illusions, his tricks are phenomenal. I was at a dinner party one night in the Nobu restaurant at Caesar's Palace. And Nobu was behind the grill on a very rare occasion.
Hmm.
And David Blaine came in and did a trick with fish.
Okay.
With an entire aquarium tank of fish.
Was he filming something?
Yes.
Okay.
I think you may have seen it on one of his TV specials.
Okay.
But he just walked in and he had the tank, and he asked Nobu to fill up the tank with water.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no curtain draped to cover the tank. And he plunged his hands. He showed everybody that his hands were empty. He had his shirt sleeves rolled up past his elbows, and he plunged his hands into the tank, and there must have been 300 goldfish in there.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it took place as close as you and I are sitting now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, almost on top of us.
Right.
And so you couldn't have had the 300 goldfish trapped in the bottom of the tank.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't in his hands and they weren't up his sleeves.
Okay.
So, and the question is, was there a piece of glass that was in there,
mm-hmm,
that stopped you seeing the, mm-hmm, goldfish that were already in there,
mm-hmm,
that then vanished when the water got poured in?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if David Blaine had filled the tank himself with the water, I would have been very suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
But he got Nobu to do it, and Nobu wasn't in on it.
I mean, okay.
Nobu almost fainted when he saw this happening, except, uh-huh, he said, oh, I have lots of sashimi for the rest of the week.
He looked at it from a profit standpoint.
Yes. It was an amazing illusion,
uh-huh,
done right in front of our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a different experience when you're close up, as opposed to carrying that to a 2,000-seat theater.
I love close-up magic.
Mm-hmm.
I love close-up magic, which is why I love Bill Malone.
Yeah.
Because he can do it right in front of your face,
mm-hmm,
inches from your eyes.
Right.
Go figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I think Bill once told me that he's 3 to 5 hours a day
practicing
with his cards.
Mm-hmm. He's committed.
Very committed.
Yeah.
Sometimes he should be committed.
I just set you up.
That was
man.
A joke, Bill.
I've just set him up.
David Blaine could do his street magic as a stage show here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're going up against some pretty stiff competition now. I think we're magicianed out at, mm-hmm, this moment.
Mm-hmm.
My friends Jarrett and Raja are about to open at Hooters at the end of March. I love them because they do, first of all, Raja is the most amazing concert pianist I've seen.
Classically trained at Juilliard.
And Jarrett's a little bit goofy.
Mm-hmm.
But the balance, the yin and the yang of that really works.
Mm-hmm.
When you,
because you've seen their show before, because they work Vegas and other,
yes,
rooms. Yeah,
they were downtown at the Plaza, and I've seen them around. But you know, when they went on Shark Tank and they did that pitch,
mm-hmm,
to raise a couple of million dollars for their own show, the trick that they did, which was the transfer of a woman from a box,
okay,
to inside the piano, which was made from glass,
mm-hmm,
swimming around with fish.
Mm-hmm.
And the piano was pretty much in full view to the cameras the entire time.
Right.
Was an amazing piece of magic. It was all the more amazing because the water was beginning to seep out of the keys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know whether they told you that.
We went into great depth about the whole thing and how the Raja was sweating it out.
It was a disaster.
He said it was just literally 5 minutes before that the guys were coming out to be seated and they were still completing. They'd not even practiced it yet.
No practice.
Yeah, that story is incredible.
So it's magic that they pulled it off,
exactly.
Let alone that they pulled off magic.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that they didn't get any money from the Sharks to bankroll the show, but it's great now that people have saw them on Shark Tank,
mm-hmm,
and gave them a big shot here in Vegas.
Right.
I always thought that they opened their show with too big a trick.
Hmm.
So their show normally opens with an empty box that the audience sees, that,
right,
volunteers come up and bang around in, and a drape goes over it, and the drape comes right off, and inside is a full orchestra playing.
Wow.
It's a moment that you just stop and say, how the hell did they do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we all want to ask the question, but we don't really want to know the answer.
Right.
Because the answer is always...
We want to believe in Santa Claus.
Yes, we do. Peter Pan.
Yeah.
You know. suspend all belief. It's such an impactful opening number that it should be kept towards the close of the show.
It's too strong of an opener.
It's too strong a wow, because you can't follow it up with magic number two or magic number three mm-hmm. and top it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've automatically taken away the wow of the open by coming down.
That's an interesting way of looking at it.
I mean, that's a staging way. I mean, you have to have a strong open, but you don't have your strongest
okay.
as your open.
Well, I had gotten that advice from different people who had, like Ron Wilson and others, who had counseled me about working cruise ships, and that is to make sure that you have something strong. You know, because my thought originally was, well, why not hold that back, because people are going to be on the cruise for the whole time, and because you have to do two or three full shows. And he said, no, that you need to start with some of your best stuff to begin with, because if they don't like you the first time, they're not going to come and see you the second and third time. So if you're holding off thinking your best is going to be them later.
But that may be just a cruise ship.
Well, that's a cruise ship. You're right. That's a different kind of an animal. Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're putting on a stage show, you don't want to give away.
Well, now look at what Nathan Burton does. I just saw his show last evening, and he starts out like 7 illusions in 6 minutes, you know, and they're big things, too, you know, where he makes the showgirls appear and, you know, cut in half and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's like, after long, it's like, whew, you need to take a breath, you know, and it's just very fast-paced. So.
Again, we have too many magicians in the city, and they're each fighting for an audience. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people actually come to Vegas to say that they want to see magicians other than Chris Angel and Matt Franco and David Copperfield.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to come and they're going to see one magician. Chris Correct. Is the one who gets
it seems to
more
be.
Than anybody.
That's what I hear.
But... So you're very lucky if you get a second
mm-hmm.
audience member coming to another magic show.
Yeah, because they've already seen a magic show. Yeah, they want to go see something else.
Yeah, they want to see something else, or they want to go eat a big dinner in a
right.
celebrity restaurant.
Well, do you think that David Copperfield's star is waning a little bit only because he hasn't been in the popular eye, and I say outside of Vegas, that he hasn't had a TV show in a while, as opposed to Chris Angel and David Blaine, these other guys who are in the public eye?
There is no question that television is very important in mm-hmm. a magician's career.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that television is the major driver of the longevity of a magician's life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that David's strength is that he is such a name here in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
so well established, that he doesn't need television.
Okay.
And he certainly doesn't need the international touring.
Right, which he doesn't do anymore, yeah. He stays here.
He stopped doing, because it's better that people from Brazil come and see him here at MGM than it is mm-hmm. for him to go to.
Well, now see, that was another thing. Of course, when he wasn't doing the TV shows, he was still doing tours of 350 dates a year or whatever and continuing to travel the world.
An insane work schedule.
It was. And so I can understand that at his age of saying, you know, even though he's not lugging it around, I mean, it's got the people, but still, that's got to be hard on you, I think, you know, to do that show, you know, three times a night.
Well, plus the fact that when you're doing a show, you've also got to be preparing the next one.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he may well go to, you know, Spain, but he's still got to keep in touch with his workshop here in Las Vegas.
I remember hearing... Franz Ferrari talking about when he's working overseas in Asia, and he has all these different illusions that are on cargo ships going here and going there. And so he's kind of, okay, I know it's going to take 3 months for these, and I'm going to ship these to Africa, and this is going to be going someplace else. And so by the time I get there, that it will be there. But he has to anticipate what illusions and what the show is going to be once it gets there, then unpack that and be ready 6 months later, you know.
Now, you know, Franz Ferrari, who's another friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
has this extraordinary magic empire.
Have you been to Macau? Have you seen this place?
No, I haven't seen. I was in Macau, but he didn't have the show up and running when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the Galaxy. That's an amazing thing that he created there.
Mm-hmm.
And he created it in Macau, sadly, because he couldn't get anybody here
To fund it, yeah.
To create it.
Because it was like $20 million or something. Oh, yeah. big money.
Cirque took a bigger gamble with Chris than that. But there's nobody else that, you know.
Yeah.
Chris was like a built-in success story because he had the Mind Freak TV series.
Right.
Franz did not have that. But the illusions that Franz produces in the show in Macau are mind-blowing.
And they're right in front of you.
And they're right in front of you.
He said that the stage, it takes up one-third of the theater. And so that's how close you are. And I think it's like I've forgotten how many, just a few hundred, like 300 seats or something in a theater, because you're seeing these huge illusions, you know, appear right in front of you.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen it, go see it on YouTube, because it's just as mind-blowing. I remember watching Franz do an illusion with a high-speed bullet train in Japan, where he stood on the tracks behind a sheet of glass. And the train just roared right through the glass and himself. And just to stand there and have a train come at you at high speed is enough of a trick. But to be able to be on the back of the train when the camera, without an edit, pans right down it as it's roaring by, to then see him is incredible. I also like the simplicity of... you know, Asians love magic.
They do.
They're fascinated with magic. My friend Jeff McBride here in Vegas, who has a school for magicians.
Mystery school.
Incidentally, where Matt Franco learned the craft before he did America's Got Talent and landed, you know, at the Link Hotel. Some of the illusions that Jeff does, which are performed in a very intimate non-theater setting in the Olive Garden over in Henderson. And he, with his masks, he's another magician that hasn't got his rightful recognition on the strip. And likely will never make it to the strip. I think that, as I say, first of all, we're magicianed out.
Okay.
We have too many magicians fighting for spots on the... and a hotel casino is not going to run the risk of investing big money in somebody who is really not known in the general consumer area.
Okay.
It's a shame because there's so much talent out there. People do love magic. People do love magicians. Every time I've celebrated a birthday or a special event, I've hired a magician to come and entertain after dinner. And people sit there with their tongues hanging out of their mouth because they can't believe what they're seeing.
What they just saw, yeah.
So I know that the art of magic is very much alive still, and people's fascination with it is still very large. I think of my friend Michael Chout with Monday Night Magic in New York. That's a tough town to operate in.
That's the only show in town.
Well, it is. Ricky Jay is the only person to have conquered Broadway with a magic show.
Well, Blackstone.
Excuse me.
Houdini.
I stand corrected because Penn and Jillette... Penn and Teller did it and are going back to do it again on Broadway.
Are they? Okay.
So, and again, when you look at that act, you say to yourself, that's a unique act. One doesn't speak. One does all the talking for...
Both of them.
100 minutes. you know, they make their political viewpoint heard quite loudly.
Yeah.
And so it's not that it's historical magic, but it's statement magic. It's using magic for a message. Whether you agree with it or not, it's irrelevant. But
right.
It's not silly patter. it's not childish stuff. Mm-hmm. It's serious. It's heavy.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Punctuated by absolutely brilliant...
Mystery, yeah.
Brilliant magic mystery.
Yeah.
But anyway, Michael Chout has Monday Night Magic, which is a showcase that gives magicians from all over the country a place to hang out and perform mm-hmm. in New York.
Every Monday.
Every Monday night. And it's been running, I don't know mm-hmm. how many years now, but...
About 20?
Yeah, I think you're at the 20th anniversary. Mm-hmm. My friend Todd Robbins, who was the founder of that with Michael.
Mm-hmm. And Peter Samuelson and yes. Jamie Ian Swiss.
Mm-hmm. And Jamie Ian Swiss is another
genius. Another guy with great cars.
I hired him once for a show.
Sure, I can believe that, yeah.
Incredible magicians. And yet there's no space for them in New York to entertain, which is their home base.
Mm-hmm.
And if they came out here, they'd be lost.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that as smart and as clever and as brilliant as magicians are, it's really not the magic that gets you the booking. It's the personality, it's the reputation, it's your past achievements.
True. I can see that. Yeah.
Franz Harari, who landed this extraordinary operation in Macau, could never get arrested here in Las Vegas.
Because the people don't appreciate magic in the U.S. the way they do over in Asia.
Partly basically. Something to do with it. Okay. But again, I think magician doubt.
Mm-hmm. You think that Las Vegas needs to step back and take a breath for a few years and then come back again?
No, because magic is such an integral part of the entertainment history of Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
It's been included in almost every variety showcase production.
Oh yeah, like Ed Sullivan,
one way or the
yeah,
other.
Sure, yeah.
And as I vehemently say, it is the cleverest part of show business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody can, should be able to read lines, remember lines, and act somebody yeah. else's life out.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're a magician, you have to make certain that the trick never goes wrong, unless you're Tommy Cooper, mm-hmm. and you integrate that into your performance.
Yeah.
If you don't come with a reputation built from television,
mm-hmm.
You've got to have appeared somewhere and done something absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So it's also the toughest part of show business. It's the cruelest form of show business. And all of that is a great shame. Magicians, in a sense, themselves have harmed the image of magic. Does that make sense
no,
to you?
No, say it again.
Magicians themselves have harmed the image of magic with bad dialogue,
okay,
silly routines,
yes.
childish performances.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they were as awestruck by the magic that they perform as we are that watch it,
mm-hmm.
I think that they would have a different sense of how to deliver magic.
If they looked at it from the perspective of the audience, kind of.
If they were more accepting of the fact that this is a very, very clever art form.
It is.
But you know, they become cynical with it because they know it isn't magic. They're doing something that is by rote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We are spellbound. We are looking at it. And I think in some cases, the magician who performs it laughs at his audience for being so silly.
Hmm. Hmm.
So I think that magicians can elevate the status of their art by not being so cynical about it, by not being so comedically cheap about it, and by being in awe of what they're doing at the same time. Now, I know they do the same thing night after night after night.
And they have to remain fresh.
Yeah.
But those who are successful have figured out how to do that, and that does take a lot of work.
Well, that's why there's only five of them that are
working. At the top there, yeah. The rest of us are struggling to get that. That's true. You know, whenever I was talking with Nathan Burton, one of the things I always ask, and I'll ask you in a moment about your magic word, you know, what is your philosophy? And I was asking Nathan, and he said just to work hard, you know, that you have to do that. And I said, well, you know, it's kind of the same way, I think, with anything. If you want to achieve excellence, that you have to work hard.
Well, there's no question. I mean, dedicated, the three D's of show business, dedication, discipline, and discipline and diligence.
Diligence, okay. Mm-hmm.
So that, what Nathan told you, is covered by one of those three.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you get into the whole business of magic, I mean, I love watching Baffled with Penn and Teller,
mm-hmm.
when another magician can fool them.
Yeah, on the Penn and Teller Fool Us show, yeah. Uh-huh.
That is the greatest, when one magician can fool another magician.
Mm-hmm.
That truly is the ultimate art form.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they've produced is something wholly original.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I would say to magicians, believe in your art more than you do. Accept it as a very royal form of show business, and don't be cynical about it.
You wrapped this up perfectly, because I was just starting to say, what is your magic word or phrase? And that, think that was very well put, so, right there, yeah.
But I don't know whether you agree with me.
No, I do. That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Wow. That was great. Well, thank you. I appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for allowing me to come into your home and and have a moment to talk about magic and what's happening in Las Vegas. And so, all right, for from Las Vegas, and this is the land of champagne dreams and
champagne wishes and caviar dreams, and not top hats and rabbits.
That was Robin Leach. And for the magic word, this is Scotty.
Well,
out.
That was pretty special and pretty cool. Thank you very much, Robin, for being my guest on this week's episode of the Magic Word Podcast. And thanks also for sharing your ideas and being so candid as to your suggestions on how to improve magic. And also, I am so glad to hear that you are a magic fan, and also help promote that by hiring these top magicians to entertain your guests also. So this gives opportunities for other people to see magic who are within your circle of friends as well. So thanks a lot. And for those of you who are listening to this podcast right now, at the end of the podcast, I told you earlier on that we were going to be giving you some information about the contest that's going on this week. Well, here you go. H&R Magic Books has produced, or rather I should say, H&R Magic Books has published several volumes of Nick Trost's subtle card creations. The first volume has long been sold out, but we have been giving away two copies of each of the subsequent volumes, from Volume 2 all the way through Volume 5, which will be given out in a next upcoming podcast. But this week we're going to be announcing the winner of two copies of Volume 4. And those winners this week are, and the winners from this past week, whose names have been randomly drawn on the spreadsheet by the fickle finger of, I guess, electronic fate. And the winners' names are Tony Baronio and Wayne Taylor. Congratulations, guys. And those books will be going right out to you straight away. And I hope that you enjoy them. And also congratulate those others who have won in previous weeks. And, you know, your names might be called here on The Magic Word also. All you need to do is to go to the website, that is to the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com. And here on this particular blog with the banner up at the top that will say Robin Leach, Lifestyles of Magicians. And it will be, and towards the bottom of the blog, there is a form to fill out. Now, if you're listening to this after the contest is over, that is no longer going to be there. So this is just a limited time opportunity. So I encourage you that when you hear this podcast, be sure to rush over to the podcast website and to complete the form, fill that in, so this way that you don't miss out an opportunity to get a chance to win a copy of one of the two books of Volume 5 from Nick Trost's creative subtle Card Creations. Yeah, that's a tongue twister. And Charlie Randall from H&R Magic Books is the one who had published these, and he was the one also who has generously donated these books to the Magic Word podcast. And once he returns back from the Obie's 4F convention, then I'll get a couple copies of Volume 6, and we'll have those in an upcoming podcast available as one of the prizes then as well. Well, it's about time, I think, that we wrap up here for this week. So, until next time, stay well, get booked, and believe in your act more than you do. Accept magic as a royal form of show business, and don't be cynical about our art. This is Scotty out.